call the House Resource Committee to order. The time is 1:10. Today is Friday, May 3rd. We have Representative Kastner, Co-Chair Scalzi, Masick, Representative Stevens, Green, and Representative Fate are all here today. And we will be hearing two House bills, and then we'll do the Board of Game confirmation hearings. So we will take up House Bill 527, that's the Minto Flats Game Refuge, and we have Reva here from Representative Coghill's office to give us the sponsor statement on the bill. Reva?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Reneva Moss, legislative aide to Representative Coghill. Rather than just read the sponsor statement, I would like to say that this is a very simple piece of legislation. We do have a committee substitute we've submitted for adoption, and I just want to explain why this legislation was introduced. The Senate companion to the bill will be heard, I believe it's Senate Bill 371 will be heard in Senate Resources this afternoon at 3:30. On April 12th of this year, a group of people filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Army.
Excuse me, we're doing House Bill 529.
Yes. Did I say 27?
Yes, you did.
That's on your mind.
Yes.
But I think I made the, I'm sorry, Reva, I got mixed up with my numbers here.
To clarify,
yes, for House Bill 529.
Correct.
And I would ask for adoption of the CS.
I would move that we adopt the CS as the working draft.
Okay, so we have before us a CS for House Bill 529, and that's the C version, which was put before us today, 5302. And sorry, Reva, but go ahead.
Thank you. A group of interested individuals filed a lawsuit against the Department of Army, Department of Defense, Secretary Rumsfeld, in his capacity as Secretary of State. And count two of this lawsuit states that U.S. Department of Army and U.S. Department of Defense violated and continues to violate Alaska Statute 4603-100, subsection A. And this piece of legislation does not change anything that is in statute. In fact, DEC, in negotiations with Department of Army, has confirmed that they have never interpreted this law any different than what our legislation asks it to apply. That is that 03-100 does not apply to firing or other use of munitions in training activities conducted on active ranges, including active ranges operated by the United States Department of Defense or U.S. military agencies. I know you're probably going to hear some testimony that this is something that should be dealt with at a federal level. It is an issue that is being dealt with at a federal level. Congress is going through that motion right now. But this legislation is needed because count two of this lawsuit is based on the premise that Department of Army has violated this law, and that is not the case. I'd be glad to take any questions.
Are there any questions for Reva? For the record, we have Representative Kratula and McGuire has joined us, and we're dealing with the CS for House Bill 529. Is there any questions? Representative Green and then Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it your intention, or do we have anybody from the military planning to testify today?
Representative Green, we do, but at this time, I think we had heard testimony on our last a few meetings ago. But if they would like to testify, they can. But
what I was going to say, Madam Chairman, then is I would like that testimony repeated, and rather than go through it all, if we could add that to the record today, because I think it's very important that the record reflect that it is very important for our national defense to have a place to practice, because having been, as was testified, having been a poor athlete, nonetheless an athlete, I know that you do play as you practice. And if you don't practice as they need to practice, if and when it would become necessary, they need to be ready, and this is one of the very few places that they can. So I would just like to have that entered in the record.
I'm going to call a little brief at ease. We're back to CS for House Bill 529, and at our previous meeting, we had testimony that has been given regarding this bill and the subject matter of it, and we will include the testimony that we've taken previously to be included within this bill. And having said that, are there any questions for Reva, Representative Stevens, and then Kastner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask Reneva, is this, and I'd hope this would be as inclusive as necessary, but are there other training activities, military, that we're not including in this? Like I'm thinking Coast Guard at sea training, naval training, Air Force training. Are we including all the options, all the possibilities here that we need to cover?
Probably not, through the Chair, Representative Stevens. Chemical warfare, et cetera, is covered under other sections of 4603. This deals specifically with Section 100, because this is the section that has been challenged by the court case.
Representative Kastner and then Green.
On that point is the only
one. On that point, Representative Green.
I think maybe when that was discussed last time we met, they mentioned the Coast Guard would be doing it offshore and the Air Force would be doing it in the air, so it really wouldn't be necessary to have them included.
Is that clear your point there? Okay. Representative Kastner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Reneva, I wanted to ask a question. You stated earlier that this is primarily a federal issue, but on count two of the suit, there's a statute that is in our statute books. Do we need to add something in the bill stating that this is retroactive to come in compliance?
Through the Chair, Representative Kastner, that's a good question. Actually, no, there is no need for retroactive phrase, because this would affect future training, not past training.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Representative Kutula.
What I want to understand is, if there are contaminants on the site, does this bill interfere with DECs, or even, I guess it would just, we can't stop EPA, but does it interfere with their ability to take care of the contaminants? What if you find that there are contaminants on the site?
Through the Chair, again, I would state that that 4603 in general deals with contamination cleanup and contamination. This bill is specific to the statute that is being challenged by the court case that says that they are required to obtain a permit prior to participating in training activities that require the firing of munitions. It doesn't deal with existing contamination or future contamination.
Do you have a follow-up?
So it's not just about whether they get a permit or not. It has nothing to do with the fact that if it's a Superfund site or if it's got contaminants, that you're still going to be required to clean it up.
For the Chair, Representative Kutula, yes, it is a permitting issue.
Are there any other questions? Hearing none, thank you, Reva, for your testimony. We're going to move on to the teleconference. We have a few people that are online to testify on this bill. We're going to go to Anchorage, LIO. We have Steve Cleary. Steve, if you can please give us your testimony, and I'm going to limit testimony to 3 minutes. So, Steve, are you online?
I am.
If you could begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Steve Cleary. I'm the Development Director for the Alaska Public Interest Research Group. I also am the organizer for a 10-group Alaska coalition called CODE, Citizens Opposed to Defense Experimentation. I'm here today to urge you to oppose this bill. We believe that no agency should be above the law, particularly one responsible for 6 Superfund sites in Alaska. These pose grave public health and safety hazards to Alaska and the wildlife that many people depend on. That's why we oppose this bill. You've heard that this legislation is necessary or needed in order to null a lawsuit before the courts currently. We do not believe that that's what the purpose of legislation should be. People deserve their fair hearing in court, and legislation shouldn't be crafted specific to one lawsuit. We've also heard that it's important for our national defense that this bill go through, and that practice makes perfect. Well, people also get hurt in practice, and they're being hurt now. Thousands of waterfowl, have died at the Eagle River Flats. These are the same waterfowl that hunters shoot and eat. We haven't yet seen what damage this might cause the hunters from being poisoned by white phosphorus, just as the thousands of ducks that have died have. And this bill would allow that to continue in the future, and that's why it's bad legislation. When a entity applies to DEC for a disposal permit, this is passed on to the Departments of Fish and Game, Natural Resources, Community and Economic Development, and Health and Social Services. This is a smart policy that shows the broad effects that disposal permits can have in protecting Alaskans, protecting our fish and game, our natural resources, our economic development, and our health and social services. Every other agency, business, or person must get a permit, and so should the Department of Defense and other military entities. An exemption is not necessary for protection of our national security, but the law as it stands right now is required for protection of our state and local security from the harm and health effects of these munitions and other disposed products. Thanks, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Steve. Are there any questions for Steve? We have one question from Representative Green.
It's not so much a question. Thank you, Madam Chairman. As a statement, and I know you said that the prior testimony, when it was heard, will be introduced into the record, but I think there should be a comment at this time in reference to what we just heard, that there was concern of what this might do. I would remind the committee that we heard that this has been going on for 60 years. I think that's probably enough time to see if that's going to damage the ducks.
Thank you, Representative Green. We will have testimony from DEC at this time from Tom Chappelle.
Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Chappell. I'm the director of the Air and Water Quality Division at DEC. I believe you have a copy of our written testimony today, and it pretty much reiterates what I stated last week when the same topic was discussed under a different bill. So I do not intend to restate the comments from last week. I do want to take just a very brief second and reinforce a question that was posed today by Representative Krutula about how would the department's authorities come to play if there was existing contamination. And the answer that was provided to the committee today is a correct one. If there were to be any pollution emanating from the site now, the department would have the authority and would work with the Army to try to correct that. And in fact, that issue came up with the white phosphorus problem, and the department worked with EPA and the Army and developed a record of decision which culminated in the actions that would be taken to resolve the issue. So I just simply wanted to make it clear to the committee that nothing in this legislation is intended nor would change the department's responsibilities relative to addressing contamination, whether that happened while the site was active or after it closed. And with that, that's my testimony, Madam Chair. I certainly answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you, Tom, for clearing up a few of the issues here at hand. Are there any other questions for Tom? Hearing none, Tom, thank you for your testimony. The next person that we have signed up is Pamela Miller. You have 3 minutes for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Pam Miller. I'm director of Alaska Community Action on Toxics. We are one of the co-plaintiffs in the lawsuit at question here, and I feel that it's important to perhaps clarify some of the reasons why we brought this litigation, and that the fact that the litigation was brought as a last resort after the Army failed to address our legitimate concerns. I've been a part of the Restoration Advisory Board for Fort Richardson for 4 years, and I've brought this issue publicly and in our formal comments to Fort Richardson repeatedly, and feel that our concerns have not been addressed. I also submitted written testimony, so I won't reiterate all of those three pages in the time that I have. But I'd like to say that this lawsuit is designed to do two things. One is to prevent further harm to Eagle River Flats, to both the wildlife and human health, and also to try to get the Army to clean up what we think is a very serious problem with the more than 10,000 unexploded munitions in Eagle River Flats that we think present not only a safety hazard, but a toxicological hazard. These munitions have been proven over and over on ranges throughout this country that these cause harm to wildlife and human health, and some of my testimony presents some evidence of that. And we also think that the Department of Defense should be required to comply with the same set of state and federal laws that any business or any industry or individual is required to meet. In seeking the permits required, we don't think that this is presenting any dangerous confrontation to national security. In fact, we think it's important that the Department of Defense protect the health and safety of people at home just as much as it is for them to be able to conduct their training activities. And we think that by requiring them to get this, the set of permits that we are seeking through this litigation, we don't think it represents any threat to national security. In fact, it is an attempt to hold the defense accountable for considerable harm that they've created in a very important salt marsh estuary here on Cook Inlet, just north of Anchorage. Thank you very much, and I would hope that everybody got copies of our testimony in their packets.
Thank you for your testimony. We have a question here from Representative Kastner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Pamela, thank you for testifying today. I've just gotten received a note that says they're copying the testimony now, but luckily Representative Curtula had this available, and while you were delivering your testimony, I was able to read your written testimony. And I have some questions for you regarding migratory birds.
Yes.
Just for some background, the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation has been doing research on lead levels and blood composition of Native people, especially women in my region. We eat so much off the land that, and it's this kind of the testimony that you're providing is pretty alarming. The YKHC, their study indicated that the lead count in pregnant women is just through the roof. And this is creating some serious concerns in my region, because when you have a very high lead content in your blood when you're pregnant, it produces the same effects in children as fetal alcohol syndrome and fetal alcohol effects. And there's no way to know exactly. I mean, this is kind of new evidence. And I'm wondering, if the chemicals that you've listed on the second page and the second paragraph of your testimony have been researched, and what that documentation has said that it does to children in particular, and if you say that there have been thousands of waterfowl deaths, and since then the Army began to remediate white phosphorus contamination from their use of incendiary weapons on Eagle River Flats, I'm wondering... And this lead that I'm talking about, that is in the system of so many women, they've traced that lead back to Mexican lead shot, because the migratory birds go down, you know, Alaska, Canada, Mexico, and they're bringing traces of it back up with them. And I'm just wondering if you can speak to that in regard to the Eagle River Flats.
and
Mr. Chair, Representative Kapsner, yes, the thousands of waterfowl deaths were shown to be a direct result of the white phosphorus contamination. At least that's what was causing the immediate and very rapid deaths of thousands of waterfowl, and continues to be the cause of thousands of waterfowl deaths per year. To our way of thinking, there haven't been adequate studies to address the full range of environmental and health effects from the other known contaminants that we know are associated with munitions. What we do know is that these types of contaminants have created very serious ground and surface water contamination in other bases throughout the country, and that's why we're seeking for the Army to not only address the contamination from the white phosphorus, but because we know that heavy metals and chemicals like RDX and toluene-based chemicals are associated with the propellants and explosives used out on Eagle River Flats.
Thank you for your reply. Do you have anything else to add, Representative Kass?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm just wondering what white phosphorus does to humans.
Tom, are you online?
Madam Chair, this is Tom Chappell. I am not fully capable of answering the question. I know that it was an immediate reaction with the waterfowl because phosphorus oxidizes rapidly when exposed to air, and that was the very acute action that happens with waterfowl, because the phosphorus, as I understand it, was buried in the soils during the explosions, and then was released with in the soils or the water, and then released when a duck would submerge his head to feed underwater or in the soil. And it's also my understanding now that the current practices on the range are that no ordinances are exploded or trials done during the summer season when birds are around, that all activity is limited to the winter season when the flats are frozen. And that certainly eliminates a lot of that sequence of events for burying the white phosphorus in the soils or under the water.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom, for your testimony on that. We're going to move on to the Homer LIO. We have Linda Filler.
Filer.
Good afternoon. You have 3 minutes for your testimony. If you can begin, please.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me speak. As a citizen of this country, I find it a crime that I must speak against our military. If I believed that our state laws were stupid, I wouldn't be here. It's unfair that anyone be exempt from the laws that we have so carefully put into place for the health and welfare of our country. Thus, I feel very strongly that our wetlands and our waters' purity is paramount to the health of our fish and our people. Our military, I would hope, is here to not to harm those of us who they're here to defend. I also agree very much with the last speaker, Pam Miller, and I hope that you will be against House Bill 529 and Senate Bill 371. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Hearing none, we do not have anybody else on teleconference to testify at this time. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify on this bill? Sue Schrader, you have 3 minutes for your testimony, if you'd like to come up.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Susan Schrader, and I'm here today representing Alaska Conservation Voters. I'd just like to take a minute to address the committee substitute. We are concerned that without the oversight that is provided by a permit system, that the military's activities at artillery ranges, such as Eagle River Flats, will continue to cause degradation of water quality and wildlife habitat around the state. There are over 130 Department of Defense waste sites throughout the country that are Superfund sites, and as we heard earlier, six of those Superfund sites are in Alaska. I think it speaks quite clearly to the fact that the federal government realizes and has acknowledged that these sites are heavily contaminated. Fort Richardson is a Superfund site. While recognizing the need for a well-trained military, efforts to protect our national security should also protect our nation's environment and public health. No agency should be above the law and granted the freedom to pollute. In my mind, the concept of homeland security should encompass the right to be secure in the knowledge that our air and water are free of toxics. Now, we understand from the Department of Environmental Conservation that because of inadequate staffing and financial resources, and because of therefore needing to prioritize, they do not require permits for rifle ranges, either civilian or military. I think that regardless of their resources that preclude them from instituting a permit program for these activities, the fact remains that rifle ranges and artillery ranges are very likely sources of significant contamination. We have seen that at Eagle River Flats. We have seen that at a small rifle range here in Juneau. To comply with their mission to protect Alaskans' health, DEC should be given the funding that's necessary for them to carry out an efficient permit program that provides oversight to these activities. Simply because they don't have enough money or enough staff does not mean that the pollution is not there. I think it should be a concern to all of us, all Alaskans, that the white phosphorus contamination at the flats was detected by the Army and not detected by our own state agency that is mandated to protect our environmental health. I think that should be something of quite of an embarrassment. So without a permitting program, there is no way for DEC to have the ability to do the type of oversight, monitoring, verification that they need to do to protect our water and air quality. For that reason, I think you should oppose this bill.
Thank you. Sue, are there any questions for Sue? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony. Do we have anybody else in Juneau who wants to testify? Okay, I think in Homer we have Bob Shavelson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Shavelson. I'm the executive director of Cook Inlet Keeper. Keeper is currently a co-plaintiff in the litigation trying to bring some accountability to the bombing range in Eagle River Flats, and it's this litigation that's largely propelled the military to come before the legislature now. I'd like to echo some of the comments that were expressed by earlier speakers, and I think it's informative to recognize that in the U.S. Supreme Court, in ruling on the release of President Nixon's tapes, said rightly that no man is above the law. And that's because we're a law of nations. We're a nation of people, and all the powers that we possess, corporations, government powers, military powers, they all flow from the people. That's the very essence of our constitutional democracy, and we fight wars to protect it. I think it's important also to recognize that in a democracy, information is our currency. And when we strip away something that sounds simplistic like a permitting scheme, we remove information from citizens, from legislators, from agencies, and we're unable to make good decisions. So I think that's a mistake. You can look around Alaska, it's littered with contaminated military sites. We can look at the devastation wrought to the environment and to workers out at Amchitka. I recognize clearly the need for a strong national security, but I think when we are the richest, most powerful nation on this planet without a peer, I think that we can defend our national security and protect the resources that support our economies and our people and our way of life. It doesn't have to be an either or. And I sort of resent the fact that we're always cast into this dichotomy where we have to choose one over the other. I think we have the technology, we have the money, we have the sophistication to do it right, as our governor likes to say. One thing I noticed when I looked at an aerial photo of the Eagle River Flats is that it reminded me of the network of veins and arteries through our own body, and I thought that analogy was appropriate because really the Eagle River Flats is the lifeblood of fisheries in Cook Inlet. when you look at the complex ecological exchanges that occur, the need for nutrition and habitat, these are the very system that sustain the fisheries in Cook Inlet. And those fisheries, of course, as you know, support the commercial, recreational, and subsistence users throughout many communities in Cook Inlet. So I would hope that if anybody on the panel has a concern for Cook Inlet fisheries and the communities and people it support, they'd recognize that this is a step in the wrong direction. The military has a budget that surpasses the gross domestic product of all the Russian states combined. They recently asked for an increase in their budget that is more than the military budgets of all other militarized nations combined. We're not talking about an inability to do this for some type of financial constraint.
It's a policy issue, and I think we need to. Your 3 minutes is up. If you could wrap up, please.
Sure. I didn't hear the bell go off. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I'll close with those comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ron. Are there any questions? Hearing none, thank you very much for your testimony. And if you do have written testimony, you can send it down to the Resource Committee. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on this bill? Hearing none, we will hold this over to the bottom of our bill packet, and we will move on to House Bill 527, and that's the Minto Flats Game Refuge Bill, and it is a resource bill. If we could have our committee secretary able to introduce this bill.
My name is Jennifer Juhas. I am staff to Representative Beverly Massett, co-chair of the House Resources Committee. This bill is sponsored by the Resources Committee. After some discussion with the Interior delegation, there was quite a bit of request that we produce something that would better facilitate economic development in the state by allowing for responsible exploration and development of oil and gas resources within the Minto Flats Game Refuge. And I think that Representative Fate has quite a bit of background on the issue.
Thank you for your testimony, Representative Fate.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, this morning the Special Committee on Oil and Gas did hear this with a very thorough, what I thought was a well-testified meeting. Several questions were asked. Mark Myers, the director of the Division of Oil and Gas, as well as Chip Dennerlein, the Department of Natural Resources. And some of these questions, if you don't mind, Madam Chair, I'll just go over because they'll be asked later, and if they're on the line, they will be able to testify to some of these questions, but it will speed up the process. So some of the questions that were asked is exploration, if exploration is permitted in the area, how much land will be off limits in this area that is called in the Nana Basin and the Minto Flats Game Refuge? Will there be a corridor in this core area, which is the deep area where it is expected a high potential of gas exists? Are there any endangered species in that core area, or for that matter, in the entire game refuge? What is the environmental value of gas to Fairbanks and to the Yukon drainage that there has been a preliminary report on? If gas is available in commercial quantities, how would that compare economically to the impact on that refuge? How does gas exploration differ from oil exploration? Are there any other game refuges in the state that have undergone this type of activity? Where is the most valuable resource located? Is it within a very sensitive area? Or is it outside of a very sensitive area? How much uncertainty will the lessee have if that lessee is not allowed to explore and develop an area in that core area which might coincide with an area of high sensitivity? will it hinder the efforts of a licensee or of a license to be able to even get into it? In other words, will he even request the licenses, or will he walk away from it? And we asked a pretty difficult question for especially both Chip Dennerline and Mark Myers. Should the legislature be even be involved in the review process when there seems to be a conflict? And with that, with your permission, Madam Chair, I'll go into the slight genesis of this, because there seemed to be a conflict because in the very beginning there was a letter, first a proposed Nanana Basin oil and gas exploration preliminary report was produced April the 12th, and in one of the sections it categorically does not allow things to occur on the Middle Flats Game Refuge, which indicated that there would be no possibility whatsoever for either exploration or development. A subsequent letter went to a private individual that basically stated the same thing. And this was when the Interior delegation was got into it, basically, because they understood that this project, which already was on board, which a company by the name of Andex in consortium with Doyon Limited, was prepared to go in there and do the exploration and the seismic work required to determine whether there was, in fact, gas in commercial quantities. So that was at risk. And that not only could have been a huge boon to the economy of the state of Alaska, but look what it could do to the Yukon drainage and to the vicinity around Fairbanks. So the Interior delegation, I thought rightfully so, became active in this to pursue this thing. Several of us did have Commissioner Rue of the Department of Fish and Game over. He assured us that that he would try to mitigate these problems, that he would try to make sure that there was no fuzziness in the letters that they had sent to the Department of Natural Resources. But along with that, that letter still left some small doubt as to really the confusion, given the report that said there would be absolutely no exploration development in there, and given some confusion, even though the commissioner did try to mitigate and clarify some things. So it was felt by the Interior delegation that a bill that would simply lift the language out of the Kenai Game Refuge and place it in this, the same identical language, would suffice to at least give the indication that we would still go ahead and explore and develop the Nanana Basin, but with the same parameters and guidelines for good, sound environmental issues, mitigating any of the problems that might come up relative to the environment. And Madam Chair, the last thing I'll say on this issue before you take the question is that there was a good public process. All of the in-holders were able to come to the table, and naturally the people of Mindo expressed their concern about their trapping, their trap lines, their native allotments, their ground that they wanted to use. But at the other hand, they said if those issues could be met successfully, they wanted the gas and they were for the project. So it's simply that if this is done in a good and sound environmental manner, that there's no reason for the project to be impeded. And so with that, Madam Chair, thank you for being able to explain this, and I will await to hear the questions.
Thank you, Representative Bate. We're going to come here to Juneau. We have Mary Jane Bate that would like to testify on this bill.
I think I hear a conflict.
Madam Chairman,
may
I say that I did not coach her in anything, and I must declare a conflict of interest here.
The conflict is so noted that we will have to hear what Mary Jane has to say.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I'm glad to be here today. I'd like to testify on behalf of the bill and support House Bill 527. My name is Mary Jane Tate. I was born and raised in Rampart, Alaska, which is located on the Yukon River, very close to Minto and the Elliott Highway. I presently live, during the legislative session on 700 Gold Street, Juneau, and my residence is in Fairbanks, Alaska, on Farmers Loop Road, and in the summers, we, of course, are on the river fishing on the Yukon River. I'm in favor of this as past CEO, president, chairman of the board of directors of an ANCSA Village corporation of a Rampart, which is called Bano Yokon, and as well as now on the board of directors, as well as in chairman of the investment committee. And we're in favor, and I am wanted to be on record today that I am presenting this in favor of the bill as it stands. Mainly because we, of our location, we could have a 12-month involvement with transportating any affordable energy within the Yukon Basin, I mean, upriver as far as you could go to the Bering Sea, because of the uses of not only the river in the summer, but also ice bridges, bridges as well as ice transportation for highways, of which we have not used in Alaska. And it is very valuable for our needs. As you know, the schools closed like many other schools in the bush, and our village corporation has had to close the store. There's, the economy is down. We've never been in a marketable area because we do not have access by land. We've plotted our RS-2477s, and we've also gone on record in the congressional delegations in Washington, D.C., have received money and okay for our highway to connect the Yukon River Highway with the Elliott Highway, which is between Minto and Manly, and this is why I'm speaking for this. And it may, and we're very aggressively proactive in reviving the village of Rampart, and the council is, as well as the for-profit ANCSA Corporation. The other interest we as is affordable energy. We are very concerned about, and it's getting more untouchable. I mean, we just can't afford it to even survive. It so happens we have a very good corporation that is successful to date, but how long can we hang on? This is why I'm testifying, and if you, at all possible, do all you can, because not only will there be training, but we hope hiring, promoting, but retaining the shareholders and non-shareholders, residents and non-residents in the area of the whole interior, which is really bleeding from the situation we're in now.
Thank you, Mary Jane. Are there any questions? I just wanted to comment, too, that I know where you're coming from, and it's pretty much all over the state where we're having trouble, and bills like this will help economic development, and I take your words in kindness and wisdom for supporting your area for jobs. Thank you, Mary Jane.
And of course, sure, can I add one more thing? The administration from the governor, lieutenant governor, as well as the commissioner of the OTPF, we've gone on record since inception of our ANCSA Village Corporation for access for the road, and we've received the money as well as, like I said, the delegation in Washington, D.C. To date, I mean, it's going to happen, and you've seen it with the money that has come across the board, thanks to Senator Ted Stevens.
Thank you. Representative Crotula.
First, thanks for your testimony. It's just great to see you testifying. It's nice for all of us. And the question that I had was just sort of the level of activity for hunting and fishing within the refuge itself, and, you know, how high is it? Is that an area that's used a lot, or?
Co-chair, Representative Petrullo, I want to say something.
I know.
I'll tell you, we have... Sure. I was raised on a trap line. I mean, not the village of Rampart, and fishing, and we just used the village as a source of supplies and missed a lot of our education, but that's how we were raised. We were educated otherwise. And yes, we hunt, we fish, we trap and log and berry picking. We use our land. This land that we will have access to, and we'll not only gain from the operation if there's exploration and development, and if everything follows through as is, but we'll also give. We're already, we've set up aside several subsidiaries, and we'd like to joint venture. Of course, we'll take care of our land. Of course, we'll take care of the animals. I don't recall my father who, you know, trapped, and that was his livelihood, ever over-trapping or abusing or misusing the use and occupancy of any of our lands or other lands. There's no federal land in the area I'm speaking of. It's state and Banner Yukon and Doyon. And I'm a shareholder of both Banner Yukon and Doyon Limited.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Jane, for your testimony. We are going to go on to the teleconference on the off-net. We have Jim Dodson. Jim, are you online to testify on House Bill 527? And if so, you have 3 minutes for your testimony, if you can please begin.
Yes. My name is Jim Dodson. I'm Vice President of Andex Resources. We have filed for an exploration license to explore for natural gas in the Indiana Basin. We see it as a natural gas-prone, not an oil-prone basin. And although this bill did not originate at our urging or anything, I learned of it this morning, and I do support it. Our company supports it. All we would hope that the bill does is make it clear that the Yukon Flat, I'm sorry, that the Nenana Basin is not wholesale off limits to natural gas exploration, and put the Nenana Basin, and particularly the Minto Flat Snake Game Refuge, in a similar position to other state game refuges within the state of Alaska. So we do support the bill, and we do think that it clarifies it. I think that the Alaska Department of Fish and Game feels that their position regarding the Nenana Basin, particularly the Minto Flats, may have been mischaracterized in a preliminary best interest finding. This legislation would simply further clarify what development may occur, of course, subject to the proper permitting, within the Minto Flats State Game Reserve. And that's my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Are there any questions for Jim? Hearing none, we will move on to Mark Myers. Mark, are you online?
Yes, I am, Madam Chairman. I'm primarily here to answer questions. I can make a statement if you wish.
Okay. Are there any questions for Mark? We do have.
One is the Susitna Flats Game Refuge. One is the Trading Bay State Game Refuge. Those specifically have language similar to proposed to this bill. There are other state game refuges that are basically mute to the point. So, again, this would be consistent with Trading Bay and Susitna Flats.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you, Mark. We'll move on to Chip Dennerline. Chip, you have 3 minutes for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just make a few brief statements, and I think Representative Fate referred to my testimony this morning. My name is Chip Dennerline, Director of Habitat and Restoration Division for Fish and Game. I am also familiar with both conservation and commodity resources. I formerly did work with Cook Inlet Region and Siri Production Company, and in fact helped develop a natural gas well in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. The basic background to just give you on Minto is our concern was that it's a very north of the river, particularly very important wildlife area, predates the refuge, was recognized as the most important fish and wildlife area in all of the Tanana Basin plan. And it's not only for its production, and sensitivity, but high public use. It's the highest harvest of waterfowl in Alaska, in that area for subsistence and sport, and it's a very obvious complex of lakes, ponds, wetlands, which why it's such a hot spot. The development of subsurface oil and gas resources is allowed in the game refuge, so long as it's compatible with the fundamental basic protection. Those fish and wildlife resources, our plan does say this in the regs, and this bill has been correctly cast as mirroring that. We think the issue to that area is going to be access in the northern area. Some of the language that came out in the discussions during this process did create the impression that everything north of the river was a blanket off the table. We've tried to clarify that. And really, just for the committee, there's sort of three accesses. The first is for exploration. We don't see any problem with that. We're not talking about cutting seismic lines or things like that. The important other two accesses, though, is if you find oil and gas, which the state would hope to find natural gas in this case, access for drilling and development pads and things like that. And most very important in this case is production, which is if you find something and produce it, can you get it out? So it's a pipeline issue. And the licensee operator would want to know that if they do find sufficient quantities of resource that they could get it to market. What we had intended to be was to say in our biologists and our staff in Fairbanks and Allot and his people who are well respected by the oil industry did say in our first comments that in our world we sure wish we didn't have any development north of the river. It's a very important public use and sensitive. What we meant to say was that if we are going to have some of these areas in the license, the advisory was we didn't really mean it as a blanket prohibition, and to say that these would require some special mitigation. And there might be, and there would be some areas that we would not want surface occupancy.
Chip, your time is up.
Okay, so we believe we can work on the ground, site by site, within this language, and meet the dual purposes of the refuge and to protect the fish and wildlife, and to allow the viable development of this prospect.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Chip? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony. We're going to go to the Fairbanks LIO, and we have David Shaw. David, if you're online, you have 3 minutes for your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is David Shaw. I'm the Conservation Chair for the Arctic Audubon Society, which represents all members of the Audubon Society in the area north of the Alaska Range. We're committed to the conservation of birds and bird habitats in interior Alaska. House Bill 527 undermines the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's ability to limit exploration in the Minto Flats. This bill also puts critical bird habitat in the path of oil and gas exploration. We're opposed to this bill because, according to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Minto Flats is one of the highest quality breeding and staging areas for waterfowl in Alaska and possibly in all of North America. Trumpeter swans are a prevalent breeder in this region, and they're believed to be negatively affected by noise and human activity. And they're often present in this area until November and are early arrival and arrive early in the spring. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game should have the authority to designate a core area or areas off limits to exploration. This bill seeks to undermine that authority by creating a new subsection that requires entry into the game refuge for exploration and development. The Minto Flats State Game Refuge is an important interior Alaska waterfowl and moose harvest area. This area is used frequently by waterfowl hunters, as was pointed out earlier. It's also an important area for subsistence and sport moose hunting. Winter exploration will result in a loss of critical moose habitat. Whereas the Arctic Audubon Society supports the use of cleaner fuels such as natural gas as an alternative to oil and coal, we do not believe the critical habitat in the Nanana Basin should be sacrificed. We do not believe that this area, designated as a refuge, should be open to exploration and development. And it is highly likely that it's highly likely that in the near future, a gas pipeline will pass through interior Alaska communities, tapping into the much richer gas deposits on the North Slope. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. I was going to ask you, too, and just in regards to your testimony, our state here is It's a pretty large state, but we have 60% of it is locked up in refuges or national parks. We've got a lot of land that's locked up, and I think this bill would not affect a lot of the areas of what you're talking about. But Representative Fate had a question or a comment.
No, I have a question, as a matter of fact. Thank you, Madam Chair. You stated that this bill would sacrifice basically the fishing game. Can you tell me if the other refuges, including the Kenai Refuge, where a vast amount of not only gas but oil exploration was done, can you tell me whether those three game refuges sacrificed the fishing game and the wildlife?
Representative Faith, through the chair, what I am trying to apply is that there is a danger that goes along with any development in these very delicate habitats, particularly in the Minto game. And as a result, yes, much of Alaska is off limits to areas. However, few of those areas are as important as have the value as a wildlife habitat as does the Minto Flats.
Madam Chair, just to follow through, I guess my ears were deceiving me. I thought that you were that you mentioned that it would sacrifice, and I just wondered whether you were aware of any other sacrifice in those other game refuges.
Representative Fate, what it is the risk of sacrifice. We don't know the impact of development. We don't understand exactly what could happen in this area. We don't know what will be found. It's a dangerous to go in with the attitude that it can be done right when we simply do not know.
Okay, Mr. Shah, are there any other questions? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony. We have Roger Singlin. Siglin, Roger, you have 3 minutes for your testimony.
My name is Roger Siglin. Live in 169 Frog Pond Circle, Fairbanks. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to comment. I won't belabor you with my views on developing the Minto Flats Game Refuge for gas and perhaps oil development, other than to say this proposal should have been rejected once it was known the refuge would be the center of development. I'm here partly because I am curious and partly because Mr. Fate is my state representative since I live in his district. I have a question for Mr. Fate, if I may be pardoned for asking it. What does his bill change or accomplish since existing legislation has already been interpreted to allow oil and gas development if compatible with refuge purposes? Is it his intent to ensure that concerns of the Alaska Division of Fish and Game regarding habitat and wildlife populations not be allowed to preclude development in any part of the refuge where Andex and Doyon desire to do so? After listening to Chip Denelin's comments and written comments by Mr. Rue, I think that objective has already been accomplished. Thank you.
Thank you. If you want to stay on teleconference, Mr. Representative Fate had to go to a different committee, but he'll be back if you wanted to give him that question. We're going to move on to the Homer LIO, Linda Feeler. Linda, you have 3 minutes for your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. I can't believe that he walked out for his constituent, but anyway. I find it outrageous that the government agrees to set aside areas for protection and then wants to ask us again whether we want to pollute it or destroy it. I've been in the state for 25 years, and we spend such a long time trying to set aside areas for our refuges, and a refuge, as far as the dictionary is concerned, is not what we are doing here. I can't believe that the military can even ask for such a thing. If we're going to put waste on these areas and we're going to pollute the areas, then why have we set aside these areas for refuge?
Linda?
Yes.
Are you testifying to House Bill 527?
Minto Flats?
Yes. Yes, because I know already from living on the Kenai Peninsula and living in the Anchor Point area what oil and gas can do to a community. So we've just had both of them move in, and we've had pollution by both of them, by oil. for quite a long time. And if we are going to open up an area that we've set aside as a refuge, since Minto Flats is a refuge, then you're asking us to go through the same thing that we went through in the Anchor Point area. I don't understand it, and I would like one of our representatives to please answer that question. Why do we set aside an area, call it a refuge, and then ask us to come back and want to know whether we want to go in there and use it as anything but a refuge? Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bates.
Well, I'll attempt. I got in just at the end of the question. Sometime when these refuges are formed, they have not done a critical analysis of the mineral subsurface deposits, and therefore when these things do come along, or perhaps if they did do an analysis, it showed that there was non-commercial. Most of the fish or the game refuges were put up not to deter the development of the subsurface, but mostly to protect the habitat and encourage, as a matter of fact, the not just the land, but actually even the lifestyle of the people who use the land, as well as the fish and game and the birds and the fish and the fowl and so forth. So that's about as good as an attempt you can. There was no effort when they developed these refuges to try to forestall any subsurface development, as long as that subsurface development really didn't harm the environment in which they were trying to protect.
Thank you, Representative Fate. I also would like to note, Linda, that Representative Fate had not walked out on a constituent. He had been called temporarily away to a meeting, and he is now back, and I would like to bring Roger Singling back online. Roger, did you have a question for your representative?
Yes, I'll restate it since I live in his district. What does he think this bill accomplishes, since existing legislation has already been interpreted to allow oil and gas development if compatible with other purposes? Is it his intent to ensure that concerns of the Fish and Game Department regarding habitat and wildlife populations not be allowed to preclude development in any part of the refuge where Andex and Doyon desire to do so? Those are my basically two questions, and I think his second one's the second one's already been answered by Chip Denlin's and Commissioner Rue's comment.
Well, the first question basically refers to whether it's already in the statutes. The statement that was done, which you're not privy to, that was done in a preliminary finding by the Director of Natural Resources, stated in that there would be no... fact is, I can read it to you. With your permission, Madam Chair.
Representative Fate.
Licensees are advised that the Alaska Department of Natural Resources, Alaska Department of Fish and Game, have joint management authority of the Minto Flats Game Reserve. Alaska Department of Fish and Game has advised the Alaska Department of Natural Resources that they will not approve any facilities, pads, pipelines, or roads within the 2,777-760-acre core area of the Minto Flats Game Refuge, located north of the Tanana River. This was construed to negate any possibility in the core area, and it's in the core area where the gas is presumed to lie, and I say presumed because you don't get gas in commercial quantities until you find it. But the high potential is there, and it was presumed that this forestalled any possibility of either exploration or development. A subsequent letter, which you also were not privy to, went to an individual in Fairbanks stating basically the same thing. And then it was at this point that the Interior delegation, worrying certainly about the development of gas in the interior of Alaska, as well as the possibility of lowering energy costs to the entire area, including the Yukon drainage, came into play because of these letters seemed to indicate that there would be no ability for gas exploration or development in that game refuge. And this is the history behind this, it wasn't a matter of whether there was a duplicate statute. It was a matter of clarification of the statutes, and especially of these communications by the Department of Fish and Game. And this bill, is all it does is clarify those so that there is no doubt. It doesn't mitigate at all any requirement to explore or develop or anything else outside the parameters of good environmental safety that is set by not only the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, but by the Department of by DEC, by Department of Natural Resources, by all agencies that are concerned with the preservation of the environment.
Representative Fate, Roger Sigmund again. Are you then saying that that oil and gas development should proceed even if the experts in the Division of Fish and Game determined that it would have adverse impacts on fish and game that could not be alleviated or mitigated?
No, the law doesn't say that, nor does this say that. This doesn't say that at all. As a matter of fact, in the hearing this morning, it was brought out, and I think it was brought out by Chip Dennerlein just right now in his testimony, that there may be areas of a complete sensitivity that you may have to go around through directional drilling or through making a ice pad in a different location or whatever. So there's no effort with this or any other piece of legislation that I know of to try to circumvent those environmental safeguards.
I'm glad to hear that, Representative Fate.
Thank you for your testimony. We're going to move on to, still in Fairbanks, so we have Rudy Vetter. Rudy, if you're online, if you want to testify on House Bill 527, I'm limiting the time to 3 minutes. If you can please begin.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Rudy Vetter. My post office box number is 70342-99707 Fairbanks. I'm in favor of House Bill 527. As was just discussed, there are various means by plant drilling and a number of other methods that I believe this can be developed. If this gas, if there were gas there, there is a possibility that there is a gas field there and maybe some oil. As far as the gas line from the North Slope, which would tie into this, everything has been proven that that's not economical. As far as I'm concerned, my opinion is that that possibility of the gas line in the foreseeable future, and I've worked on the North Slope, I've watched the development of the gas and oil on the North Slope right now, and for the foreseeable future, that's not a gas pipeline, that's a pipe dream, because at the present price of gas, and it could be lowered considerably per British thermal unit, there would be sufficient development into the in the lower 48, which would make it additionally uneconomical. And that's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? We have one more person at the Homer LIO, Bob Savelson. Savelson, Bob, if you're on, you could give us your testimony on House Bill 527, and you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bob Savelson. I'm the executive director of the nonprofit organization Cook Inlet Keeper. I just want to very briefly say I think this is a bad precedent. I think there need to be areas that, that simply remain dedicated to the purposes in which they were set aside. Representative Fate discussing the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, I've had the opportunity to fly over that refuge and also tour it on the ground. And in fact, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has previously found that oil and gas development in that refuge is incompatible with the purposes for which the refuge was established. And I think if you need any evidence of that, you can go to a report that was done by Fish and Wildlife Service biologists in 2001. It's called a contaminants assessment for the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. And it provides historical documentation on just a vast number of spills, leaks, explosions, other pollution events, talking about total coverage of roads, pads, and pipelines, noise, air pollution, and so forth. And the entire picture that it paints is that you can't simultaneously have an area dedicated as important habitat and have heavy industrialized oil and gas development concurrently operating there. I've also had the opportunity to fly over and tour the Susitna Refuge and the Trading Bay Refuge. And while it's certainly not developed to the extent of the Kenai National Wildlife Refuges, we see the same issues of habitat fragmentation where we're breaking up wetlands, we're filling areas. So again, we can say that these are only small impacts relative to a large area, but in fact, if we want to protect fish, we want to protect wildlife, or these are resources that Alaskans care about, then I believe we need to keep the lines defined and not mix them together. So that's all I have to say, and I thank the committee again for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony. We'll move back to Juneau. Is there anybody here in Juneau that would like to testify on House Bill 527? Hearing none, did we miss anybody on teleconference that would like to testify? At this time, we'll close public debate or public testimony and bring it back to the committee for discussion, and I'm going to roll this down to the bottom of the calendar, and we will go into the confirmation process. And the first person that we'd like to ask up is Dana Cruz. Do we have he or she?
Here he is, right there.
Dana?
You're
or Dana. Yes, we're going to start on confirmation hearings. If you'd like to come forward and give us your introduction to the resource committee. And we do have your resume on in our package, if you'd like to please begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dana Cruz. As you can see from my resume, I'll keep this brief. Lifelong Alaskan, born and raised in Fairbanks. I presently live in Anchorage at 2431 Wellington Court. I'm a businessman, primarily in the construction business throughout the state of Alaska. I also own a commercial aggregate business in Wasilla and an air service in Homer. My background is construction. However, I'm a lifelong hunter. I love to fish. A consumptive user, and with that, I'll close my statement. Be ready for any questions you may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions? I guess at this time I do have one. What is your view on the issue of the subsistence? How would you vote if you were to come to the poll if there was a constitutional amendment on the ballot? What is your view on it, and how would you vote on it?
Madam Chair, I am actually going to object to that question. None of us as Americans have to tell anyone.
Well, Representative Krutula, I may redirect my question. And can you give us your thoughts on the issue and let us know what your feelings are for it?
Thanks.
That's a big football you just passed over to me. And I guess I'd preference to what the constitutional amendment said. It's pretty broad. I'd like to look at the details, but on the whole, I'm pretty much equal access, and then, but on the other hand, I'm also passionately for the people that need it. So it's. I would tend to let the people that we elect handle that football and come up with the best decision possible for us citizens to go ahead and make a decision on. So, not to circumvent your question, but that's a broad topic.
Last year or a couple of years ago, the legislative body here passed a bill that deals with intensive management, and the Board of Game passed one of their proposals to initiate the the bill that we passed, and the administration has not done anything with the issue of intensive management. What is your opinion on that?
I think intensive management is a good tool to use. The Board of Game in proper places should use it. However, the board is only authorized, can only authorize the department to do certain things. We can't. We have no fiscal responsibility. We have no oversight responsibility. And I think in those appropriate areas, it's a valuable tool. But yet, again, all we can do is authorize the board, the department, to do what we think is right based on the input and the results we get from local people.
Are there any questions, Representative Green?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I see you were at Cal Poly San Luis.
That's correct.
When were you there?
From 1974 to 1979.
I was there taking a couple of education courses with that.
Oh, you were?
I called you, but your phone line was busy. No, no,
I'm not. I'm probably at the graduate.
There you go. How do you feel about if we were to get into some sort of predator control? There are several methods, removal, killing, neutering. Do you have a preference on, or do you have an objection to that?
Well, I don't have an objection to predator control, first of all. I do think that the least expensive way, if the state was to participate to do it, I understand, you know, we're under budget constraints and there are efficient ways and inefficient ways. However, I do believe that locally it can be handled a lot better than from bureaucracy. So again, it depends on the circumstances, but essentially the most efficient way, if you do implement predator control, will be the best.
So if any of those three methods, if it happened to be the most efficient way, you wouldn't object?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Representative Cotula.
Why do you want to be on the board?
I've been asked that a lot. I suppose it's as a user of the resource and I guess the love for this state that you tend to want to contribute. And I'd like to contribute. I've hunted all my life. I've fished all my life. And it's an important resource to the state. And I'm at a part of my career that I can afford to take the time to do it. And I think citizens of the state should do that.
Follow up.
What's your background with working with biologists or working with game managers, or have you ever worked with them? Do you have any?
No, I haven't. I guess it would be most fair to say that the department that I, when I work with the Department of Fish and Game, is for to look for areas to hunt and talk to biologists about where success rates are and what the habitat's like, and for myself or my family.
Representative Cotula.
And you've worked with retriever training and the field trials. Do you hunt with dogs?
I sure do. It's a passion of mine. It's in my view the best way to conserve birds, because if successful, you're most likely to get the bird back into your bag on it, which limits your number of takes. So Labradors are my passion, and I love working with them.
Thank you.
Okay, are there any other questions? I think Representative Bate had a remark to make or a comment.
well, I really did. I'm kind of staying quiet because I've known this gentleman for many, many years and his family. I should really declare a conflict because I have known both he and his mother and father so well. And I could put all kinds of plug-ins for him, but I just have to let this committee make up their own mind. So I must declare a conflict.
Well, Representative Bate, we will put that into the committee record, but we will so note that it would not influence our decision.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bate. I believe we do not have any other questions for you.
I really appreciate you
for taking the time to be here today, and thank you for being committed to helping and serving the public on the boards that the state has to offer.
hopefully I can contribute. Thank you.
We won't hold your knowledge of Bud against you.
George Matt. George, are you here? If you could come forward and introduce yourself to the resource committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the House Resources Committee. My name is George Matz. I have lived in Alaska for 26 years. I first moved to Alaska in 1976 and lived in Fairbanks for 3.5 years. After that, I moved to Juneau to work with the state government and lived in Juneau for 7 years. And for the past 16 years, I've been living in Anchorage. I have traveled throughout the state, including more than 70 villages, and am familiar with the diversity and natural history of our wonderful state. I have worked in the private sector, public sector, and nonprofit sector. And rather than spend time on the details, you have my resume, and it has some of that information. Since being appointed to the Board of Game last May, I have attended 4 Board of Game meetings and participated in 2 advisory committees. I have chaired the CDEC committee, which has just completed draft recommendations. Despite the diverse makeup of the committee, they were able to reach full consensus on all recommendations. I am now participating in the Joint Board Task Force, which is seeking to improve understanding between the board and the advisory committees throughout the state. I believe that one of the main purposes of the Board of Game is to provide hunting opportunity that is sustainable and fair. In terms of reaching decisions that are fair, I support the use of collaborative processes. I am very interested in all aspects of wildlife, whether that be hunting, wildlife observation, or just reading about wildlife. My wife and I believe in living close to the land and are avid consumptive users. I hunt, fish, dig clams, and pick berries. I respect the hunting tradition and recognize its importance to many of Alaska's families. I would appreciate your consideration of my confirmation to the Board of Game. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer.
Thank you very much, Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. George, I'm looking over your resume. I see that a significant amount of your time has been involved in environmental pursuits, and yet I just heard you say that you were a hunter and a fisher person.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see the hierarchy or the what am I saying, the order of preference of game?
Well, I don't see hunting and wildlife observation as being incompatible. So it's not one over the other.
You don't see them as being compatible?
Incompatible.
Oh, I'm sorry. And how do you feel about predator control?
Well, I think it's a necessary tool in the toolbox of wildlife management. And there's certainly times when it fits in.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I have a question. Last year, a couple of years ago, the board, I believe it was the administration that were suggesting to close down portions of Game Management Unit 14, I believe, and that's up by the Nilchina herd and Glen Allen and that area where people have used four-wheelers to access the game. And there was some issue about some impact to the environment. And if that issue were to come forward again and there were no real reasons or grounds or proof that there was any problem with the environment with motorized use, what is your opinion on it? How do you feel about motorized access in regards to hunting?
Madam Chair, if there's no proof that there's any impact, I mean, I would say not to bother with it. No proof that there's any conflict between user groups. I mean, if there's, it wouldn't be a problem that needs to be addressed then.
Because I think last year, too, I think the Board of Game did take up a proposal that dealt with the Kenai area in regards to the stream there. What was your opinion on that proposal?
This at the last January meeting?
It was in March, I believe.
for, yeah, the statewide meeting in January, I think it was.
In Anchorage.
Yeah, there were actually, Madam Chair, you testified at that, and we had some discussion on that proposal. It was approved by the board 7-0, and it was felt it wasn't a regulatory matter. It was just a reaffirming a policy that already existed, and that was the consensus of the board at the time.
And what is your opinion on the Tier 2 permit?
Well, there
was a lot of trouble with it, and how do you feel about the proposal that was put forward?
Madam Chair, at the January meeting, we had a lot of Tier 2. I think no one's satisfied with the Tier 2 situation, and, you know, it has problems. And I think the board at the January statewide meeting made some living within the law and the authority that we have. I think we made some definite improvements to making it work better. One thing we did was raise the cap. It was initially at 30 years, and that created some problems for people who have long-term residency as hunters in Alaska and essentially didn't qualify for Tier 2 permits, which we thought was a problem, and so we raised the cap to 50 years. We hope that those people will then, in the next round of Tier 2 permits, will be able to qualify. Concern I have with Tier 2 is verification. I mean, there's been charges, as you know, about people having misleading information on their permits. I think it's an enforcement issue. We've raised that question with the Division of Fish and Wildlife Protection. It's a difficult issue, but I think the Board of Game at the January meeting did the best it could, given the latitude we have.
And how are you? What is your position with the equal protection or the Constitution under our state Constitution for equal access to the resource? Can you give us your thoughts on the constitutional amendment for subsistence?
It depends what the amendment says. I mean, it's pretty hard to give my thoughts unless I know what it says.
Are there any other questions? Representative Green.
Madam Chairman, I'm probably going to have to declare conflict because, like George, I was born in Macomb, Illinois, and he went to DeKalb, and he's got a wife named Jeannie.
Oh, no.
He left Illinois for the great land. He's been here over 25 years, and I think there's just too much similarity there.
Oh, no. There is objection.
Another one.
Are there any other questions? Hearing none, I thank you for being here today, and again, extend my sincere gratitude that people are like yourself are willing to put yourself to the forefront to do a good deed for the people of the state of Alaska.
Thank you for the opportunity.
George, I didn't say anything about it. We went to the same barber. I didn't go to
It's part of coming from Illinois.
Do we have Cabell here today? Caleb? Okay, Caleb, are you on teleconference? Caleb?
Yes, I'm here.
Caleb, if you
can you hear me?
Yes, we can, loud and clear. Welcome to the Resource Committee. We have you up next for candidate for the Board of Game, and welcome to the Resource Committee. If you could give us your introduction.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I'm sorry that I might be able to be there in person to testify. Like I said, my name is Caleb Pangawi, born and raised in Savunga, Alaska, on St. Lawrence Island. Moved to Nome in 1970. I worked for Norton-Town Health Corporation and then former president of Quark Incorporated out of Nome. I'm currently the president of Robert Newland Senior Memorial Trust here in Kotzebue, nonprofit foundation established by Nana Regional Corporation. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I'm 60 years old. Just got my permanent hunting and fishing and trapping license, which I'm very proud of. I'm a recreational trapper. My trapping is primarily for home use, for my wife to sew things, for our grandkids. I primarily trap beaver, line otter, and muskrat. I went to school at Sheldon Jackson. I pretty much traveled all over Alaska in my involvement with my work and also other boards and commissions that I've served on. I was just recently on a scientific advisor committee for a Marine Mammal Commission as a native advisor. And also currently on the advisory panel for Alaska State Council of the Arts. And if there's any questions, I can try to answer them to the best that I can.
Okay, thank you. We do have some questions. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Caleb, I noticed that while it doesn't directly affect your qualifications for the Board of Game, that your resume, since the end of the 80s, you worked there apparently 7 years, but through the 90s you have 1 or 2 year residencies in the various jobs that you held. Could you tell us, was this a rapid changing, moving up the ladder? Why there was such a turnover in your employment record?
Okay, well, I retired from Quarick in 1989, moved to Kotzebue, worked for the city of Kotzebue as a city manager, and then I was hired soon after that as president for Inuit Circumpolar Conference, and the office was located in Anchorage. So I moved to Anchorage for a three-year office, and after that I moved back to Kotzebue and then was hired back at Quarick as the Director of Natural Resources. And I made that commitment for 4 years, and then in 1989, a family moved back to Kotzebue, where I'm currently working for the trust.
Representative Green, do you have a follow-up?
Well, I was just concerned if this was vocationally driven, or is there any? Do you consider yourself a good group worker that you would be required to be involved in other members of the board? What I'm saying is, unfortunately, from my experience in the real world before I became a legislator, this kind of a resume would make me wonder if the person had a personality problem. And I'm just wondering.
I hope I don't have personal problems.
I can't ask you that directly. I'm just wondering if this was upward mobility was the reason that you had such short tenures.
Yes, a lot of it was employment driven and family driven. My wife is from the Nana region. She's born and raised in Norvik, and she currently works for Nana Regional Corporation. And a lot of my moving was family-related, except for when we moved to Anchorage, and that was job-related because of my work with Inuit Circumpolar Conference.
Well,
I am a team worker. I work very well with other people, and in my work with Natural Resources in Nome, and also here, I've encouraged in the point where we had to deal with tough issues dealing with whether it was fish or with the game, that we include input from other users so that the spectrum of people that are involved included everybody, so that whatever regulation or a policy that might be adopted would include those that might be affected, so that they have some role in the policy that's going to be decided. And I feel that my role there is to make sure that all people are heard and their input is heard in regards to policies that might affect them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the key word I was looking for is you are a team player then.
Yes.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. I see on your resume on page 2 where you were Director of Natural Resource Programs, you direct and supervise fisheries, subsistence, and Eskimo Walrus Commission day-to-day operations. I was wondering, what is your view on ANILCA versus our state constitution on equal access to the resource?
Well, ANILCA is legislation passed by the Congress in trying to address the subsistence issues of Alaska Natives and those who lived in rural areas. And it's the law of the land. It's something that the federal government and those that are affected by it have to abide by. There's conflict with the state constitution in that the state constitution does allow for all residents of Alaska have equal access to resources. And as a member of the board, we're bound by the state constitution to allow for equal access, and I followed that in my decision-making process when we were in Fairbanks. I think we have to realize that whether we disagree or agree on certain things, that if the law applies, you have to apply the law.
Okay. Thank you very much for your direct answer. Are there any other questions? Hearing none, I would Representative Krutula.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Caleb, I know we don't know each other well, but my sister Anna speaks very, very highly of you and your background, and I just wanted to ask you what motivated you to give up part of your life to do this position.
I think it's a desire to be a public servant, to represent views that might otherwise not be might be heard, but also to serve the public in a way that I know that the Board of Game